And I'm going to ask if you would stand with me as we honor God's word and read it aloud together. Read along with me Genesis 12, verses 1 through 3. Now the Lord said to Abram, go from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land that I will show you. And I will make you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great, so that you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and him who dishonors you, I will curse. And in you, all the families of the earth shall be blessed. May God bless the reading of his word to our hearts. You can be seated. This is our text. We're going to be moving around a little bit, but this is where we are. And you see, God has chosen to step in and call a man named Abram. We know him better as Abraham, the name he's given later. Speak to him and give him a great promise. And if you know the story, things begin to take off from here. And we all know Father Abraham. And in the New Testament, he's called the father of the faithful. And we just kind of assume he's this great guy. And God just looked and said, man, there's a guy I can work with. Well, I want to tell you, that's not exactly the case. Abraham needed hope because he was living in a pretty hopeless world. And I would suggest to you that most of us would say we are living in a pretty hopeless world. We look at stuff that's going on, and it's just kind of amazing. I think about the things that happen in society, and I can remember my grandparents saying when I was much, much younger, oh, the Lord's got to come. Things are so bad. Things are so terrible. The Lord's going to come in our lifetime. And I still remember there were some very popular prophecy conferences that gave us dates when the Lord was going to come, and we were just so excited about the Lord coming, and we prayed. And frankly, we should pray. I mean, the Lord's Prayer says, your kingdom come. We want to see his kingdom come, not just greater obedience, but we want to see Jesus come. Maranatha, come, Lord Jesus. We want that. I know my grandparents were convinced, and my grandparents are now in heaven, and we're still waiting. And I can only say the world's getting a whole lot worse, and I know that my grandchildren are going to face stuff that my grandparents' grandchildren couldn't even dream of. And every generation says that. I mean, we just look at stuff and go, how much worse can things get in terms of the way people treat people and the way and the injustices and the pain, the awful stuff that goes on? And you know, every generation that comes along has great hope that they're going to do something different, individually and corporately. I mean, we have great hope as we're younger of the things that we're going to do. And I remember my student days and looking around and seeing all the incredible talent and the energy that we had and hearing speakers challenge say, you are the future. And we believed it. And we were going to change the future. We were going to change things. And then you reach an age where you're just really glad you can change your socks. You know, I mean, it's you just come to a point of realizing I can't affect the kind of changes in my world that I would like to affect. I can't make all of those things happen. And I run into a lot of people who start out with great excitement and great beliefs in what's going to happen in their future, and their future doesn't turn out quite the way that they had planned. They had planned to be married and have a family and do this, and they were going to do this in their career, and they were going to live in this place, and all these things were going to happen. And some of it happened, some of it didn't. Maybe most of it didn't. And they kind of look at their life, and they've reached a point saying, well, I don't know that I've got time to go back and remake these things. My wife and I just got back from a trip to New York City. We had a ball. My wife had wanted to see New York at Christmas. And we were West Coast most of our married life. And so this is a chance to do these things. And we went and we saw all the trappings. And we went to Macy's and we saw the lighting of the Christmas tree and, you know, all that kind of stuff. We did it all. We had so much fun. There's a lot of money in New York, just so you know. It takes a lot of money just to even live there. And a whole lot of people I know go to New York. When I was in high school, one of my friends, he was going to go to New York and make it big. And he did. He became cabinet maker to the stars. Not really. I mean, his showbiz dreams just kind of died, and he just kind of made a go as best as he could, and nothing much really happened to him. We of course, moved here from Los Angeles, another one of those cities where everybody goes to fulfill their dreams. If it's country music, it's Nashville. People go and they want to get there. They have great hopes. But for all but a very, very few, their hopes don't materialize. And for many, when those things don't happen, they really don't have an idea of what life is going to be about if the things I really think are important, I'm not getting. Maybe I'm not so special after all. Well, I just want to tell you, Abraham needed hope. He needed hope for a lot of reasons. History was against him. I mean, after all, he's human. I mean, he's a descendant of Adam and Eve, and of course, they rebelled against the Lord and were cast out of the garden, and the curse was pronounced, and things have been going badly ever since. And so because of that, separation from God has occurred. It's occurred to such an extent that most of the world was not then and is not now following the true God, not paying attention to the true God, not listening to the true God. The flood had confirmed God's ability to judge. Boy, could he. So now everybody was not just a descendant of Adam, they were all descendants of Noah. The nations had continued in rebellion. Terah and his family, that's Abram's dad, had gone in one direction. Other nations had gone in other directions. And here's Abram living in Ur, and he's reached an age. Well, we're told that when he goes into Canaan, 75. And we know he's going to live a while, but apparently 75 was old enough that when you're married, it's expected you've got kids by now, you've got a future by now. And here's Abram, and he's still living under the shadow of his dad. And he's married, but his wife isn't having children. And what's he got? Maybe like everyone else, they, you know, in their younger days, Abram thought, you know, I'm going to achieve something, I'm going to do something, I'm going to be a success in life. Well, in this society, your success was directly tied to your children. Because the whole idea was your name lives on. This is why genealogies were so important. Who are you? Well, I am related to these who preceded me. And Lord willing, I'm going to be related to the people who follow me. I mean, even Jesus is known as the Son of David. How many generations back is that? So here he is. Family seems to be okay, well off. But history is not good for him, and frankly, his own prospects are somewhat limited. Joshua tells us in that passage at the end of Joshua where Joshua urges them to make a choice. He says, do you want to worship the gods of Egypt, or do you want to worship the gods our fathers worship? Who were our fathers? Terah and Abram. Across the river, you know what that tells us? Abram and his dad were probably idolaters. They were probably worshiping some other god. So they don't know the true God. They don't really know what's going on. And apparently, dad, Terah, is somewhat directionless. In 12:1, it says, now the Lord said to Abram, but that word now doesn't give us a time reference, because in the very last verse of chapter 11, it talks about Terah dying, and there he dies in Haran, and Abram's there with him, and it says, now the Lord. It's not saying after Terah died, now the Lord speaks to him. In fact, it may indicate that this whole story takes place against the backdrop of God speaking to Abram. And God speaks to Abram, says he's supposed to leave his father's household and his kindred and go to a land that he's going to be shown. Don't know how it plays out, but perhaps he tells his dad, hey, dad, God talked to me. Which one? The true one. He spoke to me and he told me I'm supposed to leave this place. He's going to take me to a place where I've got a future, where he's going to give me a land. Terah looks around and says, well, I don't know what I'm hanging out here for either. Let's go. And that's not exactly what God had said to do, but Abram is seeking to respond, but he's also trying to honor his dad. And there are times when trying to honor God and honor those around us can be a little challenging. And so he goes, and Terah leads the way, and he takes his family to Haran. But they stop there. That's not where God was directing them. I mean, Terah was from Ur, but then he goes to Haran. Why? Because his son had a dream. Dad doesn't really have a plan. So Abram is part of an idolatrous family, has a directionless dad. He has no children. That point is made very, very clear when Sarah is introduced to us in verse 30. And you know, it's It's not that the Bible is at all trying to be cruel, but it is pointing out, as he talks about Terah and his sons and how one son has died and had a son Lot, and another son is married to this one, and then Abram's married to Sarai. But what it says about her in verse 30 is, now Sarai was barren, she had no child. Says it twice. That's like, you know, really kind of making that point. But it's not meant to be cruel. It's meant to emphasize just how big a deal this was. You know, we live in a day and age where I meet with couples sometimes, and praise God, it's not been much at all recently, but I remember earlier in my ministry, and especially in California, couples who would come and want to get married, and they had no interest in children. You know, well, we're not really going to have children. We're not going to have children. And I was always kind of taken aback because I tried to talk with them about the blessing of it. Well, that was not the thinking in Genesis. That was not the thinking down through most of history. Children were absolutely desired. Without children, Abram didn't have much hope in terms of, even if I achieve anything, what does it mean? Well, history is against him. His own prospects are limited. He really has no hope. Before God does something, he has no hope. But hope comes to Abraham. How did hope come to Abraham? Same way it comes to us. The story of Abraham as the father, as the one that we all look to as the example of faith, this story tells us how hope comes to us and how hope came to Abraham. And it's all there. In these verses, it says, now the Lord said to Abram, go from your country, your kindred, your father's house to land I will show you, and I'll make you a great nation, and I will bless you. Three things you see. First, God takes the initiative. God takes the initiative. Abraham is not seeking after God. Abraham is not one who is finding hope. He is not one who comes up with a plan and says, maybe I just need to move. Maybe I just need to go someplace. He's not thinking that way. He's not thinking in terms of the fact that everything about his life needs to change. Things that he gets from his family, things that he gets from his town and his society and his culture and his relatives, all of that needs to change. God takes the initiative. Second, God issues a call. This whole passage is often headed the call of Abram. God comes to him, and he calls him to something. He says, I want you to leave your life. I want you to go from your country, kindred, father's house to the land I will show you. The call is to come and follow the direction I'm going to give you. Leave it all behind. Come. And third, along with the call, God gives a promise. What's the promise? I'm going to make you great. I'm going to make you great. You're going to be a great nation, he says to Abram. Through you, people are going to be blessed. In fact, people who bless you, I'll bless. People who curse you, I'll curse. Do you realize in that one statement of God, everything changes? Everything. And do you see how this reflects your salvation and mine? God takes the initiative. What's true of us 1 second before God opens our eyes? We're lost. We're dead. We're without God, and we're without hope in the world. We may be pursuing all sorts of self-help ideas. We may be reading the latest Tony Robbins book. You know who Tony Robbins is, right? That guy in the infomercials, big, tall guy, is always telling you how you can be successful. Do you know what his career, his entire life has been since he was in his early 20s? Telling people how to be successful. That's it. He's just a motivational speaker. He's never really done anything except get you to buy his books, and now he has boats and all those other things. You can read all those books all you want. You can read about how to get your best life, how to make things happen. You can set out and say, I'm gonna follow my dreams. I'm gonna go to New York. I'm gonna go to Los Angeles. I'm gonna go to Nashville. I'm gonna go someplace. I'm gonna make my dreams happen. I'm gonna fulfill myself. You know what the problem is? I lived in L.A. There are a whole lot of unhappy people there. Whole lot of people were convinced they were going to be the next star. And you know what they're doing now? They were my waiter at a restaurant. I see a whole lot of people in New York follow their dreams. Well, yeah, and what happens? They wind up working in a cabinet shop or something else. And all their life's ambitions were tied up into that. Abraham could have been doing that, but then... And we could have been doing that. Maybe you were doing that. And God takes the initiative. And he comes. And he calls. And he calls your name. He knows it, you know. Your name was written down in the Lamb's Book of Life before the foundation of the world. And it's time. And he calls. And you hear. And you go, what? And notice that the call was to leave life as you know it and come follow me. And you're not going to know what all that's going to look like when you follow me. But you follow me. And a man without hope hears God say, I got a plan. And I'm calling you to follow him. And let me know, let me let you know what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna make you great. Isn't there a part of us that wants to be exactly what we're meant to be? The only one who can give us that is God. He's the only one who can make us what he designed us to be. And he says to Abram, I'm going to make you great. You're going to be a great nation. And God has made us a promise too. He's made us a promise that if you'll follow me, you're going to find exactly what you need. If you follow me and you've been worn down and you're weary with the struggle, come to me, I will give you rest. You're looking for a purpose in life. You think, I'm meant to be doing something significant. What does he say? Follow me. I will make you fishers of men. I'll help you bring people into my purposes. Come, follow. And I will make you all I have planned for you. But it means leaving everything. It means deciding that life in my current society, my country, my family, my kindred, isn't the right life. This life that is unknown to me is. You have to believe it. You have to believe. You have to respond to the call of God. That's how hope came to Abram. And that's how hope comes to you and me. No other way. So Abram has hope come to him, and he finds it. He lives it. He experiences just what hope can do, and so can we. How do I know that? The next verse that we didn't read, verse 4. So Abram went as the Lord had told him. He went. He went, how will you begin to experience all that God has promised you, all the future, including the idea that one day you're going to become all that God has designed you to be, and that's going to come to its fruition in His presence in heaven. But until then, He's got plans and purposes for you. How do you begin to experience that? You begin to experience that by doing what He says, by obedience. Faith is manifested in his obedience. How do we know that Abram believed God? Because he went. How do we know that you believe Jesus? You follow him. You do what he says. Now, let me quickly add that this faith was in the right one. This faith was in God. In fact, we find he goes and he walks through the land. He sees the Canaanites there. It's a kind of a scary place as he sees these Canaanites who are particularly evil. And he gets to a particular place that he later calls Bethel, near Bethel. And Bethel wasn't even Bethel then, but it would be later. But he gets to this place and he's walked through the land. And the Lord appears to him again and says, to your offspring, I will give this land. So Abram builds an altar to the Lord and worships him there. So we know his faith is in the right object, is in the Lord. But is his faith all it is meant to be yet? And the answer is no. And quite honestly, this is kind of encouraging. He has faith. He steps in on obedience. But then, like so many of us, as he starts off in obedience, then he makes a great big mistake. God has just told him, I'm going to make you this great nation. I'm giving your offspring. That means you're going to have kids, Abram. I'm going to give them this land. And then a famine comes, and what does he do? Last half of chapter 12, he goes down to Egypt. And he doesn't just lie. We know the story. He lies about Sarai to Pharaoh, and she's taken into his harem, and we're really concerned, but God protects her. But that story isn't just about lying. That story is about the fact that God had made him a promise and told him, you're going to receive this amazing covenant. And he's putting it all in jeopardy. He leaves the land that God had taken him to. And he gives the wife that's his wife that would have him kids to someone else. You ever do really stupid things that you know are stupid and against what your faith says, but you've still done it anyway? There's your patron saint. But in the goodness of God, even small faith, even faith that at times disobeys, is still faith that has a promise. And God protected Sarah. And God got Abraham out of there and sent them back into the land. That's all God's doing. Your faith might be small, and there are times where you still don't act based on faith. But the promise God makes to those who have believed in him is still true. And God's still going to make him a great nation. God's still going to do it. So, we see this small faith, this wavering faith, continue to look for a sign. And wouldn't you love to think, okay, he made his big mistake, that's all. He's not done making mistakes, folks. Because what we see, read the next chapters, you know, there's the rescue of Lot and all the splitting with Lot, all that takes place. In chapter 15, though, the covenant is reiterated. And it's reiterated because Abram's been waiting a while now. You know, I'm going to have kids. Yay. 10 years pass, no kids. So God says, comes to him and says, I want to encourage you. You're going to be great. And Abram says, what do you mean? I have no children. Another guy's going to inherit everything I have. I continue childless. God says, that man's not going to be your heir. And he reiterates the promise. He tells him, look at the stars. Can you count them? No. So shall your offspring be. And Abram, we're told, believed the Lord, and the Lord counted it to him as righteousness. Now, I want to tell you, that's absolutely true in that moment. I'm not convinced, though, that that's the moment when Abram is saved. It may have been, excuse me, much earlier. Frankly, I think this statement is one that characterizes true faith. The faith that believes in the Lord is credited to righteousness. Now, we know, Paul later says, this is how we know we are saved through faith. Abraham believed and he received righteousness. He's credited as righteous because of his faith. And that's in Galatians chapter 3. But you know, right after this, he continues to struggle. He says, well, maybe I got the plan wrong because Sarah's still not having kids. And Sarah says, yeah, you're right. How about taking Hagar? And you know how that turns out. We have Ishmael and we have all the problems with that. And then when God says, okay, it's time to inherit the promises. I'm going to give you a son. And you know what he says before God can even finish the promise? He says, God, oh, that Ishmael might live before you. He says, God, I'm satisfied if you make it Ishmael. He says, no. I told you that you and Sarah were going to have a son. You're going to have a son. And he chuckles. He laughs about it. And later Sarah laughs. And so Isaac's name is laughter. Yitzhak, Isaac. Do you see all the way along this great man of faith? Isn't such a great man of faith? It's not like his faith is so big. He had the same struggles we did. You wait for the promise. You wait and you wait and you wait. It's hard sometimes to have hope and a promise that circumstances just continue to tell you it's not happening. It's not happening. But as he continued to obey God, his faith was strengthened. In fact, we see his faith strengthened incredibly when we come to chapter 22. Do you remember in chapter 22, after Isaac's birth? He's all excited about Isaac, and he's thrilled that Isaac's there, but then God comes to him and says to him, take your son, your only son, whom you love, Isaac. He says in all his different ways to make this point, and go and sacrifice him on the mountain. I will show you. Man, those are tough instructions to hear. But the amazing thing is, I mean, here's the guy who lied about his wife twice. Here's the guy who ran to Egypt when there was a famine. Here's the guy who, when his wife wasn't having a child on time, wound up sleeping with her maid. But even with all those fits and starts, his faith has continued to grow. To the point that if you read Genesis 22, you see he takes Isaac and does all that he's supposed to do. And Isaac asks where the lamb is. He says, God will provide one. Don't worry. And they get there and he ties up Isaac and he lays him on the altar. And Isaac's big enough and old enough that he's cooperating because he trusts his dad. And Abraham is doing this because he trusts his God. He has such hope. Hebrews chapter 11 tells us that he believed, okay, God promised that through Isaac, my descendants would be numbered. Isaac's not married. Isaac has no children. And God has just said to kill him. So, there's only one conclusion I can draw. God's going to raise him from the dead. That's all I can think. Why? Because through his failures and through his waiting, he had discovered not so much that his faith was big, but his faith was in a God who is big, who can do what no one else can do. And when God makes a promise, he keeps it. Do you have that kind of faith yet? Do you have the kind of faith that would say, I could, like Abraham, because I have that promise of God, I could strike my son dead with a knife because I know he's going to raise him? You say, no, neither do I. But can I tell you something? The goal is not that I think my faith is big. The goal is that I get a bigger and bigger vision of God. And God made Abraham wait read enough and experience enough and see enough that when the moment came, he could exercise the right kind of faith because, not because it was big, but because the object of his faith was a big God. That's why God makes us wait. That's why God disappoints us. That's why God doesn't reveal things to us all of a sudden, all immediately, like we would want. That's why sometimes God does not give us a thing we pray and pray and pray for. Because ultimately, he's trying to grow our faith. Interestingly enough, commenting on the sacrifice of Isaac, James chapter 2 uses this very passage in Genesis 15 to talk about his faith. Was not our father Abraham justified by his works? Justified, that means shown to be righteous by his works when he offered Isaac. And the scripture was fulfilled, brought to its completion. Abraham believed God, and it was counted to him as righteousness. That's what God is about. He is about giving you the time and the testing to get your faith in God more and more and more, and a vision for God. I loved what Ashlyn said in her testimony about having that vision of someone who actually died for her and seeing Jesus for who he is and what he's done. And we need to see God for who he is and what he's done. And once we understand who he is and what he has promised, then God begins to move and change things. What was the hope of Abraham? Hope of Abraham was the same hope we had. Later on in that verse 7 of chapter 12, where he goes through the land and God says, your offspring will inherit this. That word offspring refers to his descendants. And later on, Paul uses that to make a point that the seed of Abraham was not all of his children. The seed of Abraham that was going to bless the world was not all of his children, because Ishmael wasn't going to be the one. It was going to be Isaac. Later on, Isaac has two sons, Jacob and Esau, but he's told it's not going to be both of them. It's going to be this one. And then Jacob has a multitude, and the multitude is going to be the family of Israel. Well, just like that, he says it's not that every single descendant of Abraham is going to bless the world. He says there's one. There's one. And it's Jesus. You know what? Abraham died never seeing Jesus. He was thousands of years away from Jesus. And yet that promise animated his life. That God is going to do this amazing thing. He's going to redeem. And Paul tells us that promise comes true in Jesus. And while for everyone it seemed like such a long, long time, you know what Galatians 4 says? It says, in the fullness of time, God